This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 331. The metaverse is so new. Hello, welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast that talks about everything gaming technology, collaboration, working together, and just all kinds of fun stuff that's going on in the world of tech. My name is Andy Piper. I am coming to you from a somewhat stormy, but actually as I speak to you, sun is breaking through the clouds, west side of London. And with me today is my good friend, Mr. Michael Rowe. How are you, Michael?
Hey, Andy, I am well, thank you. I hope you are also with your semi-stormy cloud breaking through weather in the west of London.
Well, we've had, unlike the US, the UK has not named summer storms until the last 2 years or two or three years.
Well, that's so because you probably didn't have nameable storms.
Well, indeed. So we've just, we are, as everybody is, beginning to have some more extreme weather conditions, especially with, you know, the heavy rains and then, you know, the high temperatures and, you know, the extremes. So the end of this week that we're speaking to you, the end of July 2021, it hasn't been a super hot week. It was we had a hot fortnight earlier in the month, but we just had this named storm Evert, I believe, come through. So it's been a bit very mixed day, but it's fine. There's not, certainly not in where, certainly where, not where I am, sort of danger to life or anything like that, but we have had some heavy flooding in the last couple of weeks, which has been sad.
Well, speaking of things that people should be aware of that are, you know, life, liberty, this pursuit of happiness, you know, things that you should just be frightened to death of, you have to go right now and install the iOS fix from a couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago, depending on when you listen to the show, right? Assuming you use iOS.
It's really difficult. I mean, it's really difficult because a lot of people either don't pay attention to their updates, they don't enable the automatic updates, they don't enable the notifications. Certainly, device updates, which are operating system updates, are not the top of people's minds. And you and I both work in tech, and I certainly always rush to the latest release because I'm always excited about whatever could be on the bleeding edge. But some of these fixes, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this topic, genuinely can be, you know, exploitable. So that means that bad people can get into your device or cause your device to do things you don't expect. So I know some of my family use Android. I also have a Windows machine. I have Macs. I have Linux boxes. I'm always updating. It's frustrating, but it is good practice just to try and keep up to date, because this one particularly was for an exploit that was quite well publicized, related to people breaking into devices for very nefarious purposes.
Just like you, I like to stay current, sometimes beyond current, running betas and things of that nature. Thing that just big pet peeve is when someone's doing a screen share and I see the icons on their desktop with the update flag on them, right?
Yeah.
It's right. Oh, and I'm just like, it's been there. It was there yesterday. We were on a call last week. It was there then. Why haven't you done the update? Anyway, well, speaking of Apple, and that update, we did see,
because we don't normally do that. We're not a big, you know, we're not a big Apple podcast. We don't normally talk about Apple stuff.
But we do all have little AirTags, and
all of us. Like everybody, including every listener that we have.
Both of our listeners.
Right.
We do have, I know I have one, you have one, Michael has one.
Three.
And Michael actually saw this article and sent it, since he was unable to be on the show this week, with a major warning from Apple that you should not use bitter-coated batteries in your AirPods, AirTags. Which is really funny because, you know, these were all the rage a few years ago, right? That kids were swallowing batteries, the little small...
Yeah, I mean, that was always, you know, kids have always been excited about swallowing batteries. I mean, that's always been a thing.
Which I don't understand.
I don't know.
The only thing I remember, which I thought was shocking, was 9-volt batteries. You touch them to your tongue and... Right?
Oh, yeah. Literally.
Yes, literally. Yes. But this, I don't understand it. I haven't been a little kid in a very long time.
So
what's the deal here?
I remember when the Switch came out, the Nintendo Switch, and the cartridges are, you know, are probably about the same size as a CR2032 battery, you know, a coin cell battery. They're very small. And there was this whole, you know, press cycle about the fact that whoever was tasting the damn cartridges instead of just inserting them into their consoles and playing the game, you know, they like, they didn't taste very nice. And I have a Switch, and I've had actually two Switches, and yes, I have tasted
them. They taste bad.
And they taste bad, and that's a good thing, because you don't really want young people swallowing them or choosing to eat them. I did not know about the fact that Duracell and some of these brands had been putting bitter coatings on them, which I presume is very similar to what Nintendo's been doing. Obviously, it's a safety thing. You know, Duracell claim or say, and I don't doubt Duracell, hundreds of lithium coin batteries are accidentally swallowed by children each year. So that's not a good thing. I don't want that. I appreciate the manufacturer's attempts to keep humans safe.
Even small humans.
But evidently, all kinds of, all sizes of humans and non-humans, I appreciate not being poisoned by batteries. Evidently, Apple has issued this thing that says if you're using one of those, then it might cause the battery not to work. Now,
that's the interesting part.
If you and I were cynical, Michael, and you, I know that neither of us are cynical, we're both very open-minded and positive,
very positive today.
Humans, we might think that Apple were looking to encourage customers to come to them for battery replacements, which don't have bitterant coatings, because they can trust us as owners of,
you know, I not being a cynical person, saying, I wouldn't have thought of that. I do find it interesting, because I can just imagine a whole new industry, a profession, mind you, of battery tasters, right? You could say, oh, this one has a nice bouquet. It has a little, you know, little lift at the end with the sharpness of the bitterness to make sure, right? You could go to a fancy Radio Shack and there'd be, you know, a well-dressed person at the front of the store and go, oh, would you like a new battery? Which type? Would you like the very dry battery, or maybe something a little sweet, like a rosé?
R.I.P. Radio Shack. But, you know, yeah, I mean, or you could have another entire industry of organizations that literally exist to strip off the bitterant coatings from the CR2032 so that they can sell them at a lower price than Apple is doing replacements to third-party customers. I mean, again, I honestly don't think that this is what Apple's players. You mentioned I have three, and I'm actually thinking of, I thought about buying another one this week because I realized there was another item that I would like to be able to track if, in case I, you know, put it down somewhere or left it somewhere. But of course, I mean, the price of the individual tags compared to buying a batch of three, you know, I think you can get three for the price of, you know, one and a half, more or less, if you buy something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan. I like them. They're useful.
It has shown to me that that my house truly is a Faraday cage.
Really?
It really has, because I've tested it. I put my keys where I normally put them, in my one drawer, and then I went downstairs and said, "Find my keys."
Uh-huh.
And it kind of said, "Well, we know where they used to be. Can you get closer?" So there is something physically in the makeup of my house that is a Faraday cage, which is why, you know, my home network, I've got the house wired, and then I have access points in multiple places within the house just to get the coverage I need. So anyway, well, speaking of, you know, I think before we go on into, you know, one of our normal topics, and given that we've had a lot of fun with the restaurant and wine sommelier, I can't pronounce the word, sommelier? No, how do you say
sommelier.
It? The person who...
Sommelier, yeah.
Sommelier. We should do a palate cleanser. And a couple of weeks back, maybe a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, we were talking about the upcoming Lord of the Rings Gollum game, which is a stealth game. And they've just released their first full gameplay overview trailer, and this is fantastic. I am utterly amazed by the look of this game. And one of the things I found really interesting, and it's unfortunate that Michael can't join us today, is they talk about they're showing a lot of content that's in the book, right? That the movies didn't capture. But they've spent significant amount of time with their artwork to make it as real to the depiction that is described in Tolkien's books. What did you think? Did you get a chance to look at this? I know
I haven't watched it. I haven't watched the you know, the animation. I've looked at the screenshots. I've been reading through and reading around this. I was excited to see you know, the range of platforms it will be available on, because I have at least two of them, but I'm almost certain I'll play it on the Series X. I really enjoyed, and I know they're going to be very different types of games to this, but I really enjoyed Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. I played certainly Shadow of Mordor to the end. I played Shadow of War to 50%. And then got distracted into lots of other games on the Xbox. And they were really fun, but they're much more first-person and fighter mob-based games. And this one looks much more... I mean, yeah, you can play them with stealth, but you're still going to end up in some significant fights and arguments with some angry orcs. I'm really excited about this. I'm a huge fan of, especially of the Peter Jackson trilogy and obviously the Hobbit stuff that he did as well. So I'm excited about this. The graphics look beautiful, and I think that it looks like they've done some interesting things around, you know, the character, to make it more playable, plausible, likable. So yeah, excited. Definitely excited.
Very cool. Well, so now back into our regularly scheduled tech geekness.
Back into robots and
yes,
dominoes.
Yes.
Yeah, let's go.
So the team of researchers at Oregon State University have taken a bipedal robot and turned it into a cross-country runner. So
that's insane.
This is so cool. They put it on a 5K outdoor run, and if you were to just cut the video top off the top of the video and just show from the hip joint down of the robot, it would just look like a person running. And the funny thing is, if you move up about 5 inches, you'll see that's pretty much the entire robot. It's hips and legs.
Yeah. No, I mean, it has a kind of a torso, just in the sense of balancing, I'm guessing. Yeah. It doesn't have sort of an upper part, but it's like, this is a robot called Cassie. Yep. I have a very good friend called Cassie. So,
are they a runner?
To see that. Do you know what? I haven't really talked to Cassie about her running preferences, but she's certainly an outdoors person. So, possible. The other thing that's very cool about this, other than the fact that, there's a bipedal robot that has run 5K, is some of the stats, some of the technical yes. metrics, right? So it has completed the route in 53 minutes, untethered and on a single battery charge. Now, I am pretty confident that my Apple Watch, in a robot that size, in the battery of my Apple Watch, I mean, I'm making a stupid statement, right? But I mean, a battery charge to run a robot that can, complete a 5K in 53 minutes, do all of the, calculations to do it, yep. Run the operating system in whatever environment, that's significant. I think, battery technology wise, that's pretty impressive.
And it only fell twice.
And so, absolutely. So, as it says in the article on The Verge that we'll be sharing in the show notes, and that we encourage you to go read, because it's really interesting. I mean, Michael and I, and when it's the three of us, or when it's the two of them, or whoever, we can wibble about stuff, but we are summarizing stories for you, which we hope you like.
And that you go on and read.
Really worth, right?
Go to the site.
Right. It's really worth reading the actual stories, because our summaries are our summaries, not the facts necessarily. We do our best to stay factual, right?
But and sometimes some of us get it wrong, but we won't mention his
name. Sometimes some of us say words that we don't like on the show. But yes, Cassie did fall twice during the run. It had a constant chaperone, a handler, but it's fascinating just to read the background and understand the work that went into this, and then follow the links through to dig even deeper. So yeah, this is cool.
Speaking of robots, and again, true geekiness, We've shared videos in the past of really cool domino setups where someone spent days or weeks building a layout of dominoes that they then knock one over, and it creates a really cool picture.
What's a domino?
A domino is a game, and a dominoes is the game. A domino is a single piece from that game, which is usually a piece of wood or plastic with numbers on the ends, on the top part of the ends.
Sounds like was this the kind of thing that the old people played with when they were growing up?
Yes. What people do with it, most people... there are still a lot of people who play dominoes. I do not. Because I think you have to just match the numbers, right? Is how it works. Well, so that piece of a domino has been used to make these designs. And you put them on their ends, and you put them next to each other, close enough that if one falls, the other one falls. And it just ripples through the falling dominoes, which is where the idea of the domino theory comes from, where one thing falls and then everything behind it falls. Anyway, to get back to the story.
Isn't that the butterfly effect?
No, the butterfly effect has to do with chaos theory, if I remember correctly.
Oh,
And
I'm glad you're explaining this to me. I just never come across this concept of dominoes. They sound
yes. So yeah, so it's a game.
Like, they sound like old people's toys.
It's okay, yes. Right. I wouldn't necessarily say old people, but yes, I've seen a lot of old people play dominoes. Anyway. So what they've done is, normally this takes, you know, days or weeks for people to lay out these really complex designs where you knock over one and then some really cool stuff happens, knocking over all the other ones in different colors, and create a painting as an example, or a picture. So here they actually built a robot that will lay down the dominoes in the pattern that you want in order to create the effect that you want when you knock one of them over. And it start the, there's an attached video, take a look at it. They start with this robot laying out 100,000 dominoes into a giant Super Mario Brothers mural.
I want to be clear that the name of this robot is Dominator.
Awesome. That is an awesome name for the robot. It puts down 300 dominoes at a time. So if you imagine, if you're putting them down yourself one at a time to get to 100,000 dominoes, and it took you just 1 second per domino, that's what, 100,000 seconds, which if we divide that by 60 seconds is 1,600 minutes roughly, or 27.7 hours to lay out 100,000 dominoes. If we do this at 300 dominoes at a time, you can do it in 5 hours.
And you can use GPS for precise coordination of exactly where the dominoes should go. Yes. And you can have googly eyes on Dominator the robot.
Well, that is the most important part of this whole story.
I mean, that is the most important part.
So they built this this robot. They do these really complex domino layouts. Think of it as bitmap art, right? Check it out. Really fun. Looks really cool. I was impressed.
Honestly, back in the day, in the 1980s, when I was growing up, and there were...
Did you play
TV
dominoes?
Shows, and there was... I did, but there was also...
So you're an old person,
show,
is what you're saying.
There was a... Yeah, I am. Well, I am now. There was a show in the UK called Record Breakers.
Ah.
Record Breakers. Ooh, Record Breakers.
How's it
record
go?
Record Breakers. That's what we are. Anyway, sadly, the presenter who sang that song much better than I did passed away. But and so did the other chap. So it was basically about people breaking records, and it was very closely tied to the
Guinness
Book of Records. And they had a gentleman, an older than the presenter, a gentleman called Norris McWhirter, who. Was the person from Guinness who would, you know, validate the records. And they would quite often have, you know, domino type, you know, challenges of, you know, massive longest ever snake of dominoes, etc. So yeah.
Very cool. And we'll have to put a link to the Wikipedia article on Record Breakers now that we had that beautiful record.
1972 to December 2001. Yeah, indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. They were, yeah, that was a very big part of my childhood, actually, which is, yeah.
Well, nice
Wikipedia article to share.
Yeah. Anyway, I highly recommend it. Go check this out. I think it's very cool.
Yeah. I mean, look, who doesn't want Super Mario Brothers in dominoes?
Yes.
And I will also mention, as an adjunct to this, just because it has Super Mario related, I've been playing with the GPI retro flag case, which is essentially a Game Boy style case that you can plug a Raspberry Pi Zero into as the cartridge, and load a bunch of retro games onto.
Oh, cool.
And I've been playing Super Mario Brothers on that in the last 24 hours.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's been fun.
Well, to get to our main topic of the day, our good friend the E Predator,
the
E-Predator. Not just any A.
They just go by the.
Yes,
now.
Yes. Yeah. Ian Hughes did ping us a tweet that he saw online from an analyst firm that has decided to release a primer. A report on the metaverse, and you and I were talking before the show that we understand now that Mark Zuckerberg has declared that, you know, that's the next generation or the next focus area, that Facebook will become the metaverse, and so
I don't think he said that. I think he said that the metaverse is a big thing and Facebook wants to be part of it. I don't think he said Facebook will be the metaverse, but. I mean, I wouldn't. Well, no. Look, let's not go there. But you know, I think he just kind of said, you know, this is the next big. Is the next big thing?
Yes, because it's
of course this particular report from Newzoo, 2021.
Yes,
trend report.
Yes,
intro to the metaverse.
Yes,
intro to the metaverse. Now, Snow Crash. Was published in 1992, I believe. Second Life came out sometime in the mid-2000s, yeah. And we were certainly using it.
In 2006 through really about 2012, I think.
We've spoken in the last 2 months about some of the other topics in this area where, you know, there's companies that are Roomkey that I mentioned. I went to their event. That we're looking to, you know, sort of collaborate or bring themselves into the Fortnite / you know, Zoom / other, you know, this whole kind of spectrum of stuff. But, you know, the metaverse, Michael, it's new, right? It's all new. What is this? Talk to me about it. Tell me about my metaverse.
Michael. I am utterly amazed by this. So I'm looking at their gateways. Sorry, right? And they're showing centralized versus decentralized. And, you know, wow. They have a lot of the ones that you would expect, like Second Life, Minecraft, Grand Theft Auto Online, which is an MMORPG. But they don't have, like, the granddaddy MMORPG on here of World of Warcraft, right?
World of Warcraft.
They don't have Star Wars Galaxies because it's not around anymore. If you're going to develop a metaverse ecosystem diagram, represent the ecosystem, right?
I think that the problem that many of these diagrams have had, and some of these spring from 20 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, evolution of social web, you know, Web 2.0, etc., is that they do what we're seeing in this report, which is to slice stuff up, right?
And try to classify actually, it.
Right, exactly. Whereas actually there is a globe, right? There is a sphere in the middle of this into which these things connect, right? So
almost like a giant social network.
Right. What I'm looking at in the metaverse ecosystem diagram on page 4 of this report is just a bunch of logos
randomly stuck into groups.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Of everything that people might have thought about or might have some kind of potential connection to this thing.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas what's missing still 25 years later is the thing that pulls it together. Right. Now, interoperability is the thing that pulls it together. But where does that interoperability happen?
Well, obviously, you know, under connectivity on the bottom right. I mean, they show T-Mobile.
Oh, right. Yeah. HTC, Equinix. Yeah, that's right. That's that bottom right blob there is all everything that's going to fix
it. It lists all the, you know, every one of the major telcos, except for like O2 or AT&T or. Again, the problem with these reports is exactly to say they took a bunch of logos, they blobbed them into categories. They're not comprehensive, right? If they were comprehensive, under connectivity, you would pretty much see all the telcos, right? Because
next, well, yeah, I mean, next page, what is the metaverse? The metaverse no authoritative definition. Several thought leaders have offered a framework. We're the one that has offered one, yeah. And then there's some others that are selected, and Facebook is not one of them. And you know, the only ones that are really listed are Roblox and Epic.
Yeah.
That are significant in what people know about. So look, I'm not. We're both having a bit of fun.
Yes,
here, right?
And you know, having worked with a lot of analysts in the past, right? I know what they're doing. I kid because you know I know how important this
we
is.
We care. Yeah, we care, and we kid because we've been around this loop a few times, right? And you know, they do have a history of virtual worlds in here, and there's a bunch of other stuff. This is not a bad report.
Right.
Michael and I, for our listeners, are, you know, riffing on the fact that we've been talking about this stuff and indeed working
in
this stuff for some time.
Yep.
And I am excited. I've put on my Oculus Quest 2 more often in the last couple of weeks than I had in the 2 months before. There's some cool stuff going on, and they're re-evolving the technology. So they're not connecting to very much outside of their own bubble
yeah.
at the moment, and that's absolutely key to all of this. You know, Zuckerberg did say, I believe, in at least one of the interviews I read, that you know he does think that it should be possible. I may be overlaying journalist commentary with Zuckerberg's commentary, so if I'm doing that, I apologize to those people more informed than I am, but I got the sense that there was like an interest or a desire to understand how portability could be part of this, and I know that 10 years ago 15 years ago we were talking about portability of avatars, content.
Exactly. You know, how can you package up an avatar in, say, World of Warcraft, right?
Hmm.
Go through the portal and show up in Second Life. I think that was one of the exact examples that we were talking about.
Yeah.
I want to say almost 15 years ago now.
Yeah, I think about 15 as well, yeah.
And if I were to just pull on that thread a little bit and I look at... And I'll, you know, not that we're an Apple podcast, but what is it? The UDX format, right? Which is an attempt by Apple to package a full 3D model and a lot of its characteristics into an individual package file that can be rendered on different platforms, whether it's in ARKit or within Preview on a Mac or in a web browser or whatever, right? Each one of these little steps get us to the point where we might have a metaverse where you can start off in a gaming world and then jump out into a business setting because you're there for a meeting and then move into a conference zone, right? Because you want to go to a presentation on the next greatest whiz-bang widget, right? So
I'm still, as I said, when we talked about RoomKey a couple of months ago and some other things, I'm still really interested and excited about Microsoft Mesh. I think that some of the stuff that Oculus are doing around I think the challenge with Oculus in particular is the space required, which may not be so visible in the US because generally speaking, hopefully speaking, you will have slightly larger spaces at home domestically as well as in the office. But certainly in my house, I don't have the room to, you know, put on my headset, say, I have done this, say, here is my couch, that's worked. Here is my desk, here is my keyboard. That's not going to happen. They're in a totally different room. I don't have space.
Yeah.
I can barely play the Vader game in Oculus because I just don't have
enough floor space in my living space. I think that when you get to that point where some of those tools that like Oculus, those visual interfaces like Oculus, like Mesh, get to that point of a connection, then I think there's some really exciting stuff to happen. But at the moment, it still feels like we are throwing, as we said at the top of this item, throwing a ton of logos on a slide and saying there's some cool stuff happening.
Yeah. Watch this space.
without really joining it up. And that's what, you know, I think it's that joining things up. And another kind of point of concern or thing to think about is you look at Facebook, Epic, some of these very, very large tech companies that say they want to, you know, enable a metaverse and participate in the metaverse. Okay. Start joining up.
Yeah.
Start joining up and not demanding, let's say, I'm not assuming any of them are demanding, but let's not demand anything.
Yeah, build a standard, start a consortium, you know, right? Put an organization together that says across these platforms.
Enable it, right? Rather than talking about it.
Ecosystems are hard.
I fear that. You and I and Michael both all know that, and our listeners, many of our listeners know that as well. Yes, they are, and I fear that, or I'm not. I don't fear it, but I, again, cynically, ironically, think, you know, what is in it for you?
Yeah.
If you're not coming at it from a World Wide Web interoperability perspective.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that that happened well with the web and has been somewhat subverted occasionally has been that there was a consortium, that there were standards in place in the beginning that everybody had to use to make it a thing. And now we have 15, 20, 30 things that are vying to be either part of or the metaverse,
right.
And they're not necessarily connecting up, and there is no standard, and that continues to niggle at my brain.
Yeah. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on how do we get to a metaverse, right? We'd love to hear your thoughts on our show. We'd just love to hear from you, and you can do it multiple different ways. I highly recommend you tweet at us on Twitter at games@work_biz, or go to our Facebook page at games@work.biz on Facebook. Or, you know, how about just drop us a comment at our website at games@work.biz. Or, you know, you can also do, which would help us a lot, go to your favorite podcatcher or pod site and rate us. Give us a rating. Put a comment in the ratings. Let others know that you listen to games@work.biz. And we would greatly appreciate it.
That'd be really cool. Yeah, no. Michael, it's been, as always, and I know I've missed a couple of weeks, and you and Michael have been holding up the fort in your brilliant ways, but it's been brilliant to talk to you and go through these topics, and especially on the virtual worlds and metaverse side, it really feels like it brings us, the three of us in particular, sort of back to ground zero. Yeah. In many ways, right?
Lots of fun.
It's always a delight to talk about tech and games and fun things with you. So friends, listeners, we you know, as Michael said, we always love to hear from you, love to hear whether you think we're talking nonsense, whether we're talking sense, whether Michael's getting his plurals wrong.
Well, I was going to say, I was going to go home and sit in my Lego fort and listen and edit the show and make sure that my collection of Lego don't cause any issues for people.
That's good. Did you, by the way, did you order a Steam Deck?
I did not.
Did you pre-reserve a Steam Deck?
No. I don't have time to play the games I am trying to play on the devices I currently have.
I mean, I've just ordered another device, which isn't a Steam Deck, but I did reserve a Steam Deck. I've got no time for any of this, but I'm just such a geeky game head that I'm going to do it. But, well, may do it.
So,
all right, everybody.
We will talk with you next week.
Talk at you, really.
Well, yeah. Well, you can listen to us next week.
And talk with us.
And with us at gamesatwork.biz.
All right. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.